So, welcome to the Secret Circle podcast. I'm David Eid, the host and moderator for this show, and we'll talk about initiation tonight. On the panel, we have Paul Joseph Ravelli, Camille Perkins, and Ryan Higgins. The questions for tonight are, what is initiation? Does initiation impart secrets? Does initiation alter consciousness? Is initiation equivalent to wisdom? Can we become initiated despite our will? What is the difference between initiation and adepthood? I think we'll start off just by asking you, Paul, what is your perspective on initiation?
Initiation is, while at once a new beginning in something, but we should say that new beginning is psychic, you know, of the mind, emotional, that addresses directly the human condition. We find ourselves in need of certain rites of passage as human beings, and without these certain rites of passage, there's no way into either certain a common social strata or certain modes of awareness that are considered to be particularly human or even meta-human modes of consciousness. If I didn't really wax too poetic.
What do you think, Ryan? What's your perspective on initiation?
For me, initiation is a process that involves changing consciousness and a long-term change of consciousness as far as the AA grades are concerned. And more importantly, it's a process in which the way in which you focus on yourself and your relationship with the world develops a new perspective, which means a new awareness of your identity, who you are, what you are, and a new awareness of what the universe is, a new awareness of what that relationship is. And integral to those three elements is the state of consciousness.
So now both Ryan and I have both waxed very poetic.
Okay. Take another puff off that joint.
We certainly both sounded like we smoked one before.
Well, I'm a bit tired. Once I'm warmed up, hopefully I'll be less poetic.
Well, whether I'm tired or not, you know, I did just as bad.
Yeah, we don't have any problem with you guys being poetic. But what do you think? Do you have any personal experiences with initiation or personal perspective that you want to share with us?
I would say it's a rite of passage, but it can be a formal or informal sort of acceptance into a group where the aim is something beyond yourself. So I think the person being initiated has to consider what are they being initiated into, and does it match with their own interests and their own the betterment of themselves and what they're trying to further. But as far as initiatory experiences, we were talking before about like the first sex experience. So I would say something along those lines, but exploration of the body, like when you're going through puberty and you masturbate and you figure that out, or let's say on a more thalamic level, when I did a polarity exercise, I thought that was very eye-opening, because I looked back and I thought, wow, I really did that. I drew some images later after that exercise, the images that came to my mind, and they were very powerful.
I think when you get right down to it, The very first initiation that we naturally crave is to grow up. Here we are, 6, 7, 8 years old, and how are we being led on by parents? Do you want to sit in the big boy chair? And you can't wait to get the car to show that you've grown up, so you're going to cry like a baby to your parents so they get you one. We constantly lunge for that higher state of being, which we know intuitively is something beyond our present state. My present state, I'm 6 years old, I do what I'm told, I go to bed when they tell me to do, I wear the clothes, and what the hell, mommy ties my shoelace. Right? And you look for that opportunity to say, well, hey, I can do what I want now, I'll stay up late.
I definitely think you could see or characterize initiations as positive growth beyond what you currently are. And again, that does involve your identity and the way you relate to others in a new form of consciousness and self-awareness without being too poetic. Cameron?
David, you're asking, what it was, basically. To give a general idea, what's the manipulation of energy when you're giving and receiving energy, but one partner has an image in their mind, and then basically, I think what happened was it was transmitted to me, and then I drew out the images that came up in my mind. That's what it was about. But initiatory experiences, I would also say what was really important for me when I first started to feel the psychedelic experience of marijuana.
Yeah, I would add that a magical initiation really means a change in development in your understanding of who and what you are. I see that as the bottom line of it.
Yeah, it's all about, a way to grow. And that way to grow is intimately connected with the change in consciousness. There is a real change in consciousness from what mom and dad do to finally that day when you start determining when you'll go to bed at night, when you're buying your own clothes, so finally the day you're paying the rent or whatever else, that you've now established some sort of personal autonomy. We then go reaching for meaning, for better circumstances in our lives. And we discover, by this point in our development that we have more going on inside our heads besides, just securing and shelter. We want to establish a certain quality of life. And in that, we need to find, some rationale for our existence being one in a world of almost 8 billion people.
What's weird is, and I don't really understand it, is one thing is when I look at the person that I used to be, even just a few years ago, I'm thinking, how could I be that way? Like, I would never be that kind of person. I wouldn't do those things now. So whenever I think of the past, it's like, it's totally alien to me. So I guess with each step in progressing, it's very often I think, what's next? How do I roll with this? How do I keep it going?
You actually looked at that from two perspectives inside that one statement, Cameron. It was really, really good. You saw yourself, you saw that you have come to a larger awareness now that you couldn't go back to that, shall we say, petty behavior of maybe even just last week or 2 years ago or six years ago, right? And yet at the same time, you've also found an existential way of just rolling with the punches, shall we say. Learning to take life in an impeccable means. So you've stepped through some sort of limited consciousness which really couldn't get you to visualize much farther past your front yard. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, burn.
The young kid doesn't see outside the room they're in. The young child doesn't see outside the front door. So they're finally allowed to run around the house that they can't see past the yard line till the day they go to school. And then they can maybe see their town for the first time.
each, then I can see other people.
Each is a step in awareness. So each limitation of knowledge allows for a behavior that might seem appropriate at this time, but when I reach a greater, more expanded, deeper level of consciousness, I might find that this behavior was rather shallow or Luddite or whatever, just, just banal.
But here's what's kind of distressing, and this feels rather empty. When I look at the past, I can't really see who and what I was. I just see the circumstances where I was just thinking about everything else, as far as, I guess, blaming everything and everyone else. And it just seems so alien to me that I'm frankly really kind of disgusted about it.
you begin to objectively view the circumstances because you're no longer inside those circumstances and you've evolved beyond those circumstances. So even though they may make you feel uncomfortable, you may not like the way you responded originally, you're only getting that because you have an objective distance. When you were subjectively involved in that, you were convinced that was the right way to behave. Mm. So you see, there's the measurement of your growth.
So initiation is something that triggers you to start to think in new patterns, and therefore altering your consciousness and altering your behavior.
Those new patterns come about because there's a greater depth and breadth to our apprehension of the world around us. In other words, I can see deeper into the world and I can see at a wider breadth.
Mm. So we actually need new thought patterns to organize the information we take in.
Yeah, and so I gain that larger perspective.
I would say at a personal level, it's like looking at yourself from the outside point of view instead of just on the inside.
I just wanted to add that one note that Crowley said about initiation, which I found to be true for myself even before undertaking my work with the AA, was that what's true in one grade is not true in the next grade or the grade following. And it really is true when you're in a certain stage of initiation, your ability to see is limited to a particular point of view. And when you successfully move to another level of consciousness, you're capable of having even a completely contradictory point of view, and you're looking back at your thought processes and conclusions in the previous grade, and you're like, it's just not true on some level, or it's not relevant on some level. And yeah, I can't remember where I read it, but I've read it several times, that quote. It may have been in Magic Without Tears, but I'll have to look for it. If anybody else has read it and they're listening to this podcast.
The best I can think of where Crowley says something like that is in a commentary to one of the holy books. This book is true through grades or whatever.
Yeah, I've read that, but I've also read him specifically stating, almost verbatim, that what's true for one grade is not true in another grade.
Not necessarily true.
Yeah.
I would agree with that, basically. What's true for a 6-year-old may not be true for a 13-year-old, which may not be true for a 21-year-old.
Well, just look at the difference between the dagger or the magical knife and the pentacle. You know, when you're working through Malkuth as a neophyte, collecting impressions and not discriminating, you don't even really have the ability to discriminate. And then in the work of Zealotr, where everything's bullshit for you, you know.
Well, you develop...
Everything's taken apart. Emperor wears no clothes on a very deep level.
Well, you develop discrimination.
Yeah.
Just every impression is not necessarily an impression that you want to hold on to.
Guys, I'm reminded of this story about Einstein when he put out his test to his class. And then some of the students said, well, this is the same test as last year. So how can you do that? We need a new test. And then he said, well, it doesn't matter because the answers have changed. It's the same test, but the answers changed.
That's good. You know, that's exactly it. With each larger scope in your apprehension, in your awareness, comes the same old issues. But yes, the answers have changed. In other words, the relationship has changed. Each generation must define its own relationship to the divine, because the divine has changed.
Yeah.
Eternal and constant, but we've become something else. And so this is at the heart of initiation, is transformation, becoming somebody or something else in some way, shape, or form. That's not to say that we deem of change, that we're looking for change. We're not looking to change the nature of character, but that our very understanding can automatically initiate a process of transformation. In other words, we're not looking for result.
The whole deeming out of change could be interpreted in many ways. I see it as something to be experienced more above the abyss, deeming out of change. Below the abyss, we deem of change, and rightfully so. If we don't grow. You know, the 4-year-old who deems of, you know, growing up and driving a car is deeming of change. But understanding that your essential self, your essential nature cannot change. Your essential nature is above and beyond these externalities. So I've always seen the deem not of change injunction in a slightly different light. Though I do agree with you that we do have to transcend lust and result.
Yeah, we have to allow that initiation will take us on its own course.
Yeah.
It may not be the course that we egoically choose.
Yeah, okay. I can go with that 100%.
Yeah.
Guys, going further, what about, does initiation import secrets?
It most certainly does. But the thing is nobody tells you them with their words. And I'll repeat, sorry David, because I said it to you before, but it's relevant. Lao Tzu's statement in the Tao Te Ching, that those who know don't tell, and those who tell don't know. The words of the teacher given to the student and also from the student to the teacher can only point one in the direction of a certain awareness, and it is in a certain awareness where information is passed on to the initiate directly via his state of consciousness that he or she is in. And it is in that state of consciousness that the secrets are communicated. We can use technical language to express these secrets. But from my experience, the real secrets themselves, nobody has ever been able to verbalize to me directly, only through implication.
Combine that with the Tao is saying that, you know, to know the Tao is not to know the Tao. To be able to describe the Tao is not Tao. To name the Tao, it is not to know the Tao even.
Not only that, I've received, you know, magical instructions from spirits when I've worked with 231 or down evocations, and they made it very clear that if I tell anybody else about how this works, that it's not going to work anymore. And I found that to be so.
Yeah, this is true. As far as the spirits of Liber 231, they will tell you if you're ready or not. And because with the quote that Ryan was saying earlier, it's that you have to be at certain stages of consciousness to get, you know, the particular secrets or to be able to progress. If not, then you have to do some more work on whatever issue you're going through.
And let's now take it and recognize that there's two branches to these secrets. There's the one secret that I think we've all been speaking about so far, which is all about, you know, whatever inner awareness. I mean, how do you walk up to somebody and say, this is the secret to maturity? You know, it's not something you're going to put in words. It's experience and the growing, developing mind that can comprehend that. But the other types of secrets that do get imparted, and they get imparted by words, are secret passwords and handshakes, secret parts to the riddle or the puzzle that's being given to a candidate overall. These are the techniques of certain magical organizations, orders, lodges, fraternities, groups of different sorts, covens and other type things.
Fraternity, masonry.
There's a real danger. There's a use of these secret handshakes and passwords. And there is a certain technical value. But again, they're more of a means, an external means for creating a setting in which the new form of consciousness is inducted and can take place and can grow. The danger of these passwords and secret knowledge is the vanity that can come with it. And valuing them is the secrets in and of themselves. And being what I would call a secret society junkie, you know, the guy who knows all the secrets and the Masons, like, I got all this cool secret stuff. You don't know it. Except there's no, they're just words. They're just externalities. Now, in the context of consciousness and personal work, these secrets are quite meaningful. For people who, you know, maybe had too hard of a time getting girlfriends in high school and now need a club and need to use walkie-talkies and make crop circles, well, the whole essence gets lost. And I've seen this happen in a few magical societies. It just becomes a... It can degrade into a way of self-delusion.
The vanity and pride is one thing in being inducted into a group. The other side of that, of course, is the feeling of inclusion. You know, now you've made it, now you're one of us, congratulations, because I wanted to be one of us. You know, whether it's joining the adult club, hey, I'm grown up now, I can go to bed when I want to. Or it's the, hey, I'm happy to be part of the steelworkers union, you know, I'm getting better pay and benefits for my family, you know what I'm saying?
Well, with my earlier grades, I did experience that, but as I moved on, I was more interested in developing inner strength and just seeing it as a signpost in that development.
A certain inner strength, whether we're talking those mundane situations or we're talking something more sacred like the induction into a magical community of some sort, we're still talking about the ability to be able to handle ourselves at that level. On the one hand, we've proved it, and on the other hand, then we're going to gain the benefit of our connection with the group, giving us even greater wherewithal, whether that be courage, armor, or what have you.
Right.
So,
And this is what a healthy magical organization should give. But of course, it's a two-way street. We also need healthy aspirants who are willing to expect a wholesome relationship.
Right.
With a magical organization. Again, I think the best personification of the danger I was talking about, quite humorously, could be seen in the Monty Python movie Quest for the Holy Grail. I remember when King Arthur wants to cross the river, and there's the Black Knight, you know, and, you know, he's clearly lost. He's like, but the black knights always win. You know, he knew the secret passwords of some organization, you know. And all it did was reinforce his vanity and self-delusion. It's like a guy who joins a certain martial arts school and is convinced that he's invincible because, you know, he's in this school and it's the best.
No, we have all the ways that we might relate once we get, you know, into these magical organizations. There's that warm, comfy, cozy place that we actually sought and maybe proactively earned.
Yeah.
And that can also be a part of an initiation, building up skills to get to a point where we might merit something being given to us.
But the comfy, cozy place really gives me a sour taste in my mouth. I find whenever I get into a comfy, cozy place, whether it's in a day career or magical career, I find that's when I'm in the most danger of inner corruption, internal corruption, meaning getting lazy, using that comfy, cozy place to have others not see my weaknesses, not judge me as harshly. And there's a real risk of stagnation when we get comfortable where we are.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think one of the grandest traps of all is getting to a place where we're resting on our laurels, that warm, comfy, cozy place.
Yeah, and you see it also in mundane careers, you know, professors, police officers, etc. As you noted in an article we looked at last year, the more power somebody has, they have a tendency to judge people below them by higher standards than they apply to themselves. And also their ability to judge time and to do things comes with those decisions as well. So in a sense, they lose power. Their power is only...
But yeah, the power is lost because one stops honing one's skills. One stops keeping oneself at that level. Because any level you attain must be maintained. I mean, this, I think Castaneda talks about well in The Ways of the Warrior, and I know I've woven into a few articles that I've written. Old age is one of the enemies of a warrior because he feels he can finally rest. He's earned his rest. And you can't. You can never give up. If this is something that you are attaining to, it is about every moment of your life. It's not something, you know, we do for a while and then, you know, go back to sleep.
Also, to apply this directly to the questions we're being asked, this is why the AA, in my opinion, is one of the more antisocial orders or magical structures. And I think the beauty of it lies in the fact that you have less social power in this order. I mean, you can, to a certain degree, because we are social animals, but it's really minimized. So that forces you to continually work on developing real power, which is self-sufficiency, willpower, personal integrity, etc. This is the core of real power, as far as I perceive it, and the raison d'etre of our initiations.
Well, we're certainly moving to some sort of self-empowerment. There would be nothing for us to seek if we weren't seeking at least that.
Yeah, and the beauty of the AA is the fact that at least officially, you know, the student only knows his or her teacher and students. It basically prevents or sabotages any attempt to create a centralized teacher or guru and a centralized body of students that all meet together and then can start socializing and then creating what I would call artificial power structures, where the power is purely social.
Well, these power structures, again, these are all types of initiation. Or situations in which initiations can happen. We've covered here like a general gamut of ways and types of initiations one might stumble through here in this recording. And whether we're leaning towards normal growth and development in stages of living life here on Earth as a human being, or whether we're talking something, you know, more holy and magical, or whether we're talking about something, you know, more, you know, mundane and tending to the business of survival, we see that it is inherent in human nature to seek some sort of initiatory thing. Whether we call it an initiation or not doesn't matter.